You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket after the fourth day's play in the third test at the Aegeus between England and Pakistan. And I want to sound excited, I want to sound elated, I want to sound really upbeat, but I don't feel it because watching that day's play was not much better than watching the grass grow. It was slightly, and I suppose at least Jimmy Anderson took his 599th wicket, though looking at the weather forecast and the weather for the remainder of the day today, as well as the forecast for tomorrow, it looks as if he might be on 599 wickets for some time.
Who knows when he's going to take that 600th Test match wicket. I mean, we don't know when England are going to play their next Test match. They've got a day tomorrow to try to wrap up this game. The rain in the morning forecast, who knows when the ground is going to dry out. So lots of imponderables going into the final day. You hope he would get the chance to do it. Although having said that, it would be great actually if he took his 600th Test wicket in front of a crowd. We've had this whole summer of Test matches being played without a crowd, and there's some great achievements. Jack Crawley's double hundred, England's wonderful, amazing victory at Old Trafford, West Indies, thrilling run chase in the first test at the Aegeus. And it always felt he just needed a crowd. Perhaps Anderson is waiting for a crowd for his 600th test wicket. Perhaps that's what Josh Butler's saying tonight as well, after that remarkable drop off Shaun Masood. I was just inexplicable, really. I talk about a bit of a wobble after the ball had gone past the edge. I mean, it looked like one of those ones that you'd expect a keeper to catch 100 times out of 100. I'm sure even Josh Butler would say that. I mean, you might be able to explain quite why it happened, that it didn't quite dip on him, but it looked, you know, very, very catchable. It was one of those, actually, when you were watching it, you thought, is he nicked that or not? Because no one seemed to react. It was a really strange one. He saw the replay, really big nick. And, you know, as much a dolly, really, as the one Stuart Broad dropped the previous evening.
Mm. Yeah, and actually, we've seen, as a result, such a variety of emotions from Jimmy's face, haven't we? We were talking about this yesterday, you know, complete fury when the slips missed the catch, and sort of astonishment when Broad dropped the one he did last night. And then today, you know, bemusement, really. How did Butler make such a mess of that? I suppose, I remember actually quite a few catches going down off my bowling at Lord's, and it wasn't at long off or ha-ha on the nursery or, you know, at the top of the father time or something like that. It was actually catches at second slip. And Mike Gatting dropped a few off me, actually. And there was this weird scenario at Lord's, which is a very unique ground. But the slip fielders at the pavilion end for the bowling at the nursery end are actually slightly lower than the pitch because of the slope. And so what happens is their hands go tiny bit lower than they should sometimes, because the ball is slightly higher, or the batsman is slightly higher, and the ball just keeps coming at them and doesn't dip or drop as much as they're expecting, because they're at a slightly lower position and they get hit on the wrist. And I think that's what happened to Butler today. And I'm not saying there's a slope at the Aegeus Bowl like there is at Lord's, but somehow that ball, and it's part of the, it's all that to do with that kind of wobble seam stuff and the ball moving after it's past the stumps, that after bat swing we talk about, and this of after bat dip as well. And this was after bat saw, you know, the ball just kept coming rather than dipping as Butler was expecting.
Yeah, and it actually hit him. It didn't hit his gloves at all. It hit him on the inner thigh. That was the one that went down today. Anderson had he almost had a smile on his face, as if, well, you know, I'm getting used to this now. And the other sort of aspect to it as well is you almost felt as if, I don't know, I was trying to explain it, almost as if the England players had a sweepstake about when Anderson was going to take his 600th Test match wicket, and then sort of no one had it for this Test match. It was all for his next Test match. So that's four players in the side who dropped a catch off his bowling. I mean, whether it really would have advanced England's cause that much if that wicket had fallen. Shamasu was out after they resumed after that long delay for rain. I mean, who knows? England up against it, I would have thought, to win the game. Now, the pitch has gone, you know, it's pretty flat. It's just a pretty good pitch for, you know, a groundsman who didn't have a great deal of time to prepare a surface between, you know, the last Test match and this one, only 3 days, and all the weather problems as well. But yeah, it's actually quite a good pitch for batting. What do England do, Yoz, do you think? You know, they've got this problem, haven't they? They find it quite easy to take wickets in England in helpful conditions. We talked about this last night, you know, with the lights on, you know, Anderson, absolute, you know, he's such a handful. But what do England do when they, you know, try to take wickets on flat pitches overseas?
Well, I think two things. I think that Jofra Archer needs to sort of find out what sort of bowler he is for sure, because at the moment he's still not sure. He has produced these spells, and in fact in this test he has produced a couple of overs of 93 miles an hour plus, and that was quite impressive. He didn't really sustain it, and just as he looked as if he was going to try that today, going round the wicket and maybe sort of trying a few rib ticklers and so on, the light rather ruined it. So he's got to find a way of taking wickets himself. And that doesn't necessarily mean he has to bowl at 93 miles an hour. But I think if he's not really clicking in terms of speed, and that can happen to anybody, he needs to maybe try different positions on the crease, or try to be a bit more imaginative. He tries the odd slower ball and so on, and that's good. Maybe the odd Yorker. So they need to find somebody who's going to experiment a bit. And that could be Archer. That could be Mark Wood. That could be Ollie Robinson, who obviously has a bit of pace and is quite an exciting cricketer who hasn't yet had a chance. The other thing they need to do, as I think probably, is try and get Rashid involved. Because even though his test record isn't great, he is a clever bowler who, with the right sort of protection and the right sort of situation, could take wickets at test level on these kind of barren pitches. And I think there has been talk of, you know, getting him back into the fold. And I think that will be necessary when England next go to Australia, if not India.
Haven't England been here before with Adil Rashid? I mean, he's a fine bowler in white ball cricket, instrumental in England winning the World Cup. I mean, two things about it. A, haven't they tried that before? And B, does he really want to play red ball cricket? And, you know, does he actually really just want to concentrate on white ball cricket now for the rest of his career?
Well, that's a good question, which I suppose we need to ask him. But I think, I bet you that lots of cricketers will be sort of reflecting after this weird summer with the pandemic and everything about what they want to do in the future. Another one might be Alex Hales, actually, who I bet is feeling frustrated that he doesn't play red ball cricket. Rashid, you know, he's a talented bowler. He's played test cricket, obviously. He's had the excitement of the World Cup. And the thing about, you know, many of the guys involved in that World Cup win is that, you know, the Stokeses and Butlers and Roots and so on have all got test cricket to look forward to now. But some of them, you know, the Morgans and obviously Liam Plunkett out of the scene now, and one or two of the others, Rashid, haven't got so much to look forward to. There's no World T20 until at least this time next year. So what is going to sustain them between now and then? Well, you know, the chance to play some Test cricket in Rashid's case must surely be quite exciting. Go to India and bowl on those pitches in those incredible grounds with the, if they play in India, obviously. I think it must be something that would excite a cricketer, even one who is a little bit reluctant to play red ball cricket, as Rashid is.
Well, he's had this shoulder problem, which often bedevils leg spinners, because you have to use so much shoulder to bowl leg spin. He's 32. Mm. He's played 19 Test matches. He's taken in his career, he's taken 60 wickets, and he averages 39, you know, really close on 40 per wicket.
All right, if not him, then I don't feel that Dominic Bess is definitely the answer. The only thing is, Bess is young. He's keen to learn. He's only played, say, a quarter of the number of games that Graham Swan had at this stage. Well, when he came into Test cricket, Swan had played 160 first-class games and Bess has only played about 40. So, you know, he's definitely learning on the international stage, which is never easy to do. He's young. So I think he will get there. And he's showing signs of trying to find the right way of taking wickets. He's looking at how Nathan Lyon bowls, and that's a good person to try and copy and emulate. So I'm not sort of completely giving up on Dominic Bess, but I think he needs some help and he needs someone else who has a bit of mystery, a bit of X factor in the spin department. If that's not Rashid, you know, it could be Parkinson from Lancashire maybe, or someone else. But, you know, looking ahead, they need someone, a spinner, who's going to do things on flat pitches.
Yeah, well, that's the problem they've got, isn't it? At home, no problem at all, because the seam bowlers do the job. And then, you know, occasionally the spinner will get involved. I mean, until fairly recently, of course, it was Moeen Ali, who, you know, has got a pretty good Test match record. We're talking to somebody who's taken 170 Test match wickets and made Test hundreds as well. I mean, you feel that... Do you feel there's an answer there, or is that, you know, ship sailed, if you like?
Yeah, I feel that ship sailed. I don't think Moeen is a Test bowler. I mean, I know he's taken wickets, but in a way, Bess is probably going to be ultimately a slightly better bowler, and Moeen's batting seems shot to bits in Test cricket. So I think I'd be looking to try and you know, find somebody else. It's not easy, obviously, with the lack of cricket that we've had this summer as well to test out some new young players. Let's just move the conversation on a little bit. We got Andrew Sampson involved again today because I thought it'd be quite interesting to look at the unusualness of England enforcing the follow-on. How unusual is it? And obviously, in a way, this game has sort of fallen into their lap a little bit because Pakistan were out just before the end of play, so it made sense to enforce the follow-on because he knew that the bowlers would, if they had to bowl a couple of overs last night, it wouldn't be for long, and then they'd be nice and fresh again today. But actually, surprisingly, Joe Root has enforced the follow-on more than I was expecting.
Joe Root got the opportunity to enforce the follow-on the fourth time in his career as captain, and it's the third time he's actually enforced the follow-on. As we are aware these days, most often teams decline to enforce the follow-on, which is a trend that's kind of really embedded since about 2014. There have been 68 opportunities to enforce the follow-on since the start of 2014, and only 27 times has the captain actually enforced the follow-on in Test cricket.
That's a little bit higher than I was expecting, actually. That's nearly half.
Yeah, well, that's about 40% it's enforced. So if you look at the kind of margins, the lead that teams have had when they've enforced the follow-on and when they haven't, it becomes much higher if the follow-on's around about, if the first innings lead's around about 300. In that case, it's now 19 times the follow-on's actually been enforced and 8 times that it hasn't been enforced out of 27 opportunities. And Joe Root's in line with that because the 3 times he's enforced the follow-on, the lead's been 346, 310 and 290. And the one time he didn't enforce the follow-on, England's lead was 217.
What I noticed yesterday was that Azhar Ali decided, having been not out in Pakistan's first innings, he decided to open the innings when they were asked to follow on.
Yes.
He walked out to take the field. But then they didn't bowl a ball. And then this morning, I found he wasn't opening the batting. So can you explain that?
Yes, it's law 25.2, which says that the innings of the opening batsman start only at the call of play. So the scorers will start the clock when there's a call of play at the start of a session or at the start of a day. Whereas a batsman's innings, would, if he comes in after fall of a wicket, starts the clock starts as he crosses the field, as he crosses the road to go into the field. So last night there was no call of play, so Azhar Ali's innings hadn't started. So he wasn't compelled to come and open this morning.
I bet. Did you know that law 25.2 or something?
I did not, Yoz, and that was a new one on me. Mainly, I think, because I've never seen a situation like that happen before. What normally happens is if a player's playing well, they're almost like happy to sort of walk off and take a rest and let the openers do their job. But he plays so well yesterday, and he's a number three, of course, as well, and he's the captain. He almost felt like he felt compelled to sort of take it on because he's had so much criticism. It's actually a great way of sort of leading for your side, actually, and protecting one of your opening batsmen. My wife actually made a very good point. She said to me this morning, well, even if he'd gone out, he could have just retired hurt, couldn't he? If they said play and he'd faced one ball, he could have retired hurt. I don't know whether that's all against the spirit of the game, so then Shaun Massoud comes in or Abid Ali or whatever to replace him, and he comes in at number three. But I mean, that would be one way of sort of getting around that sort of situation anyway. It's funny, isn't it? The game throws up all sorts of new things you haven't seen before. Right. It's a very simple game, score runs, take wickets, but beneath it all there is so much complexity.
I was once pushed up to open. I've batted in every position for Middlesex, actually, and once I was actually the number one. And it was because we were playing at Uxbridge, which is a famously quite a difficult pitch at the start of the innings, does a lot with the new ball and then flattens out. And so in the first innings against, I think it was Warwickshire or Essex, no, it was Essex, I think, we got bowled out for about 200 or something, and they'd got 400. So we were asked to follow on, and I was not out at number nine. I was the not-out batsman, about 25 not out or something. So Mike Gatting said, well, go on, you can open again. There's only about 15 minutes left for play. I was effectively like a night watchman opener. So I went in to bat again and got a sort of about a fifth baller or something out. And with the score at the end of the next day was 300 for one. So Gatting and Haynes put on, they both got about 200 each or something, and we were finished up about 500 or something. But it was one of those stupid scorecards which two people got nearly 200 and one person got naught, and that was me.
And you were done by the new ball, presumably.
Done by the new ball.
Yeah, because that's the other thing as well, isn't it? It's very different at the end of an innings. But actually, what happened last night was that Azhar Ali was facing a lot of the new ball, wasn't he? Or a newish ball. So he'd already had practice against a new ball, and he was so in yesterday. And he was in again today. I mean, England didn't really look like dislodging him. And it's been a great match for the number threes in this game. Azhar Ali with 100 and Zach Crawley with a double 100. And if Azhar, if we do get some decent play on the fifth day, who's to say Azhar Ali won't dig in for another 100 at number three? The pitch looks decent enough. There doesn't seem to be much there for the spinner. You'd hope there'd be more on a fifth day pitch. Doesn't look to be very much so far. The ball still just nips a bit. It still gives something to the seamers, but it's been one of those test matches where the ball has gone past the outside edge a lot rather than taking the outside edge a lot. I don't know if you've noticed this, guys, we've only had 20 wickets in the first 4 days of the test match. We have lost play to bad weather. We have lost time, but we've only had 20 wickets so far. It's been hard work, and we've become, I think, so used to test cricket in England where the ball is always in the game, and it's made it really exciting. I think it's fair to say today it was one of those days where you think you can sort of understand why T20 works, why people like T20 and why, there are T20 leagues going all around the world while the Caribbean Premier League is being played at the moment, and the IPL's coming up, and the Big Bash will be played, and the Blast is going to be played. You have a day's test cricket like today, you can understand that. But we have to put up with the bad to appreciate the good. And we've had a couple of belting days Test cricket this summer. I was thinking the last day at the Aegeus Bowl in the first test, and the last day at Old Trafford in the first test of the England-Pakistan series. And you look at it now, actually, second test drawn, Pakistan, I would have thought they've got a good chance of saving this game, especially if some of the weather comes in tomorrow and knocks out some of the play. They'll look back at that Old Trafford test match and thought, what an opportunity. Mm. What an opportunity we missed to win the series.
Yeah, that's very true, and it does show how the sort of psychological swing can affect a team, and I suppose it's the beauty of Test cricket, really. And you know, I've just done a book with Manoj Badali, the owner of the Riders on Roars, looking at the future of the game. And you know, while a lot of people think that we're modernists who are sort of trying to make everything T20 and IPL and all that, we actually do love Test cricket because of the narratives it throws up, because of the individual duels, because of these swings of psychological pressure and superiority that you get in the sequence of a 3-test series or a 5-test series. You can't have that in T20 at all. It's like the difference between a cordon bleu meal and, you know, fast food, isn't it, really? Mm. But fast food does sustain you well on certain days. I would have loved today to have had a Chinese rather than ploughing through a 4-course meal, because it wasn't very tasty, this particular meal. But maybe tomorrow we'll throw up something. And it's something to look forward to, that Anderson, that he gets his 600th test wicket. I said when I saw him take 4 in that World Cup match in 2003 in Cape Town against Pakistan, I said, that guy will get 200 test wickets, confidently.
Well, you're right. He did get 200. He just took another 399 plus more.
Amazing.
It is astonishing. 17 years ago, I was there when he made his debut against Zimbabwe at Lord's. You know, how the time flashes by.
And his
flashes
first wicket was?
Oh, that
I'll
I can't.
Tell you, I'll tell
that
you.
I can't remember.
Mark Vermeulen.
Mark Vermeulen, right? Yeah.
Not the most auspicious wicket. But...
Well, if he gets one first thing tomorrow, it will be a decent wicket, won't it? Because it'll either be Azhar Ali or Babar Azam, but both decent, well, high class players. So there's the opportunity for him if they can get on the field. England got 8 wickets to take. I suppose it's all about how much play we're going to get tomorrow. That there's a lot of rain coming in overnight in Southampton. The forecast for the sort of second part of the day is much better, but one of the things we've noticed on this ground is how long it takes to dry out. You think of something like Lord's, where the drainage is fantastic. You know, you can have the ground can be flooded 1 minute and then you're playing sort of 45 minutes later. It doesn't seem to be quite the case at Southampton, despite the fact that, you know, all around, all in the south, all the fields are biscuit brown, and you know, we're absolutely desperate for rain. But the Aegeus Bowl is probably about the outfield there is probably about the greenest place in the country at the moment, and that might actually hinder England a bit on the final day if we get all that weather that's being forecast overnight.
Yeah, there does seem to be a cloud that's been sort of hanging around the Aegeus Bowl for most of the last 6 weeks,
and Old Trafford
dumps.
As well. Yeah, and Old Trafford as well. You know,
cricket, there's white people wearing whites. So, well, let's have fingers crossed and feet crossed that there is some play tomorrow and England can wrap up the series and Jimmy can get his 600th wicket. So we'll be back at this time tomorrow to review the final day's play of the Test match summer. Hope you can join us for that. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.